On May 31st, 2017, at around 2:30 p.m., Shantara Hurry was at work when she received a phone call from one of her two sons, who were being babysat by their older sister, 12-year-old Naomi Jones. He explained to Shantara that the three siblings took their dog on a walk, and after getting back into the apartment at around 1:30 p.m., Naomi left the apartment again, this time alone. Naomi was described as a responsible and caring girl who was mature for her age, and it was unusual for her to leave her two brothers alone so abruptly. Usually, she'd only leave the apartment to take the family dog out while babysitting. Shantara became immediately worried, and so she left work and rushed back to her home in North Pensacola. When she arrived home, she quickly knocked on all of her neighbors' doors and every house on the street. When Shantara was unable to get any new information regarding the whereabouts of her daughter, she called 911 and filed a missing persons report. Investigator Michelle Wirt immediately went to Shantara's house, and she initially assumed Naomi was a runaway, like many other missing persons reports. But as she questioned Shantara, she realized this likely wasn't the case. Naomi had left two significant personal possessions at home, her phone and her purse. And since Naomi was very active on social media, a young girl leaving her phone at home while running away was very unusual. The authorities promptly took action and began canvassing the neighborhood. They knocked on the neighbors' doors and collected as much information as they could, such as what vehicle they drove, where they were when Naomi went missing, and if they heard or saw anything out of the ordinary around that time. Detective Wirt then immediately briefed the Escambia County District's Attorney's Office and Chief Assistant State Attorney Bridget Jensen. And with that, the search for Naomi Jones began.
Right now, the search continues for missing 12-year-old Naomi Jones. Hannah McKenzie is live this morning with the latest on that search. Several agencies involved right now. Hannah, what are we looking at?
Hey, good morning, Laura. So I'm here at Olive Baptist Church. This is where crews, search and rescue crews, have set up a mobile command center. Now, I just got off the phone with Naomi's mother, Shantara Hurry. She tells me it is not like Naomi to just leave.
The search was immediate and massive. It was also highly organized, with a command center set up, more than 200 volunteers from around the country, and multiple law enforcement agencies involved. The FBI even offered a $10,000 reward for any information leading to the recovery of Naomi and the identification, arrest, and conviction of the people responsible for her disappearance. The problem was that there was almost no information as to where Naomi might be found. So the only option was to thoroughly search 1 mile at a time, outwardly, with the center of the search being the apartment complex. The community worked around the clock, following up on more than 200 tips, conducting more than 300 interviews, and executing 30 search warrants. Unfortunately, despite all of these efforts, nothing was panning out. The search went on for several days, but in the meantime, investigators also looked into a list of potential suspects. They started with the friends and family closest to Naomi, who they believed might be involved in the disappearance. One of the first people they examined was Shantara's father, Robert Jones. He hadn't been very present in Naomi's life, but had just recently reconnected with her. There was also a disagreement between Naomi's parents. This caused speculation of Robert taking Naomi as a way to get back at Shantara. Authorities questioned Robert a day after the search began and issued a search warrant on his home and car. However, his alibi checked out and no evidence was found attaching him to Naomi's disappearance. The next person on the list of potential suspects was Shantara's ex-boyfriend. This is due to a text message conversation found between him and Naomi that Detective Wirt found to be possibly flirtatious. But reaching out to him turned out to be a struggle. He was clearly avoiding the authorities, which only made him more suspicious. When investigators finally got in touch with him, he was very closed off. As it turns out, Shantara's ex had a warrant for his arrest, explaining his suspicious behavior with authorities. Eventually, investigators were able to look at his phone history. And while doing so, they came to the conclusion that his phone's location history was nowhere near the apartment complex when Naomi disappeared. So, investigators moved on to the next suspect. They then scanned through the Florida Sex Offender Registry in an attempt to narrow down their search for potential suspects. Once again, they found nothing. However, there was one man in their search, a neighbor who lived in the building next to Naomi's, who had verbally indicated to the authorities that he was a registered sex offender in the state of Alabama. This is Robert Howard. Robert had been in prison for 15 years for prior offenses. He was convicted in 1999 for the sexual assault and rape of two women. Robert's girlfriend lived in the same apartments as Naomi and was a frequent visitor to the complex. Robert claimed he was in Alabama on the night of Naomi's disappearance, but investigators decided that his alibi needed to be corroborated and his background needed to be checked. They followed up with Robert for a second interview, but for some reason, his story changed drastically. Robert was now claiming that he actually had been nearby on the night of Naomi's disappearance. Both of these interviews took place in the apartment of Robert's girlfriend. But Robert was alone during the first interview. But during the second interview, his girlfriend was right nearby, and so he was unable to lie in front of her. The lack of a concrete alibi immediately raised flags, so investigators got a search warrant for his phone records as soon as possible. Once gaining access, they determined that he was in fact nearby the apartments at the time of Naomi's disappearance. Robert had traveled to Alabama and then back to Pensacola with a plethora of weird travel paths. Fortunately for investigators, they now had a clear timeline of exactly where and when this crime was potentially carried out. They were able to access multiple camera systems in the same areas that Robert drove that night, including businesses and public buses. The puzzle pieces were beginning to fall into place. At 12:59 p.m., a public bus drove by Naomi's residence, and due to the camera installed on the bus, Robert's car can be seen parked in the apartment complex. At 2:03 p.m., about a half hour after Naomi was last seen, the same bus drove around Naomi's apartment complex again, and Robert's car could no longer be seen parked there. On June 5th, 2017, 5 days after Naomi was reported missing, a group of fishermen discovered a body near a bridge in a Pensacola creek. Naomi was a 5'1" black female weighing approximately 100 pounds. Her hair was black with pink strands. She was last seen wearing a red tank top and American flag denim shorts. The body that they had just found fit the description of Naomi when she was last seen, except the body was found nude from the waist down and had duct tape with orange plastic stuck to her hair. The cause of death was later determined to be asphyxiation, 24 to 36 hours after she had disappeared. Now, with a more accurate understanding of where the crime took place, investigators quickly put out warrants for obtaining camera footage owned by businesses directly nearby the bridge. While they waited for that, they turned their heads back towards their prime suspect, Robert Howard. And on June 6th, 2017, Detective Wirt got her team to bring Robert into the police station for an interrogation.
Like I said, I appreciate you coming down to talk to us.
Well, they could have just told me to meet somebody here because I brought my little boy back to his mom today.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and they were like, well, come in down here to sign this. And I get there, they're telling me we got to come back down.
All right.
No, this is fine. That's cool. No problem.
And so you hadn't seen Naomi?
No.
Do you know who Naomi is?
Yes, I know exactly who she is. I see her. Well, you see her every time we're in and out the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Her and her brother, they're either out there playing with their dog, or they're on that back balcony, or they're in between the apartments playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they speak anytime we come in or out, they speak.
Mm-hmm.
So I know who she was, yes.
Had you seen her at all that day?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
You live in the next building over?
She lives in, like, they're downstairs here. My girlfriend's apartment's upstairs here.
On the next building over?
Yes.
Okay, so you left. Okay, you talked to Naomi's mom?
Yes.
Hadn't seen her, blah, blah, blah. What did she say to you, anything?
No, she just asked me how I'd seen her. I told her, no, ma'am, I hadn't seen her. She was like, well, you know, that she had, she told me, she like, she don't know how long she'd been gone, and that her brother didn't even know how long that she'd been gone.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that he didn't know she had left.
Okay.
And so we stood and talked. Like I told her, I said, no, if I hear or see anything, I would let her know. I would call Lauren and let Lauren let her know. And I told her if she found her, to call Lauren or let Lauren know, to let me know that, you know, she was found.
Okay.
To somebody watching this interrogation without any context, it could easily be interpreted as a normal man helping the police out with their inquiries about a minor issue. Robert is cool, collected, and confident, and in no way does it appear as if he is the main suspect of a murder. Just 2 hours after this interrogation, the authorities gained access to the camera footage near the bridge. It was discovered that about 12 hours after Naomi's death, a car can be seen driving sporadically around the bridge. The car was quickly identified as a silver Nissan, which was the exact same car that Robert drove. Upon this discovery, Robert was then arrested in his girlfriend's apartment and brought back to the police station for a second interrogation.
You don't want no water or nothing?
I'm fine. All right.
Hello. Mr. Howard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm Investigator Wirt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're investigating that missing girl from mm-hmm. the apartment complex.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been talking to a ton of people, canvassing the area, trying to get everybody to, you know, give samples of DNA.
Mm-hmm.
I have a consent to search if you would be willing to do a DNA swab.
Sure.
Yeah? Okay. No?
Sure.
Or yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
I didn't know if you said no or yes. All right. Today's date is the 7th
mm-hmm.
of June.
Mm-hmm.
It's Gambie County Sheriff's Office. 10:46 p.m. Okay, I'm going to read these instructions. All right.
Okay. All right, and then you can just sign there for me. And I'll have them come take that handcuff off. You're not under arrest at all, so I'll have them take that off.
When I pulled up, they surrounded me. I'm like, they said, you need to talk to me. All this to talk. Okay. I mean, I just came here a few hours ago.
I'm going to have that taken off. Okay. I didn't realize you were even handcuffed over there, but you're not under arrest.
Okay.
All right. This gentleman's going to get your buckle swabs. Just there.
How you doing, Robert?
I'm Brent, man. All right. I'm the crime scene guy. I'm sort of like Owen Mills, so I gotta do photos and I gotta do the DNA swab, all right? It's really easy. You ain't gotta move around or anything like that. I need for you to open that up though. Take your swivel water, rinse around in your mouth. That way you get all that dry mouth, cotton mouth solved. Because this is gonna make you just a little drier there, okay? All right, buddy. Got any questions for me? All right, let's stand right there against the wall. I'm gonna take three photos, all right? Okay. I'm gonna do overall. Mid. And close. All right, bud. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome, man.
I'll be right back.
Okay.
All right. This investigator in finger, or agent in finger, used to work here.
No, how you doing? What's your name?
Robert,
I'm Matt.
Okay. All right.
What vehicle did you...
I always drive my vehicle to work.
Which one?
The Nissan Altima.
Okay. So you were in that car that night?
Yes. I'm in that car every night.
Okay.
I had a question. Because I've been, is my house and vehicle going to be searched? Because I've been looking, that's all I'm asking. Because I haven't cleaned it, everything is still the same.
That's what they're doing right now. So
That's what I've been waiting on. That's just like I told you today.
I
know you're not saying that, and I know why y'all are taking precautions because of my status. And like I say, I've just been waiting on this to happen because I knew it was going to happen. So that's all I wanted to know. That's fine.
What is your background or your history or whatever?
Well, I got out of high school, me and the girls messed around. She got pregnant. And her grandmother is like a minister or whatever. So it was more of I made her than it being consensual to the point of, because we had been doing this the whole summer. And so I copped out because I didn't have no money to try to afford a lawyer, so I had to cop out, and I did 15 years.
How old were you?
Like 18 years old.
And how old was she?
Like 17.
Okay. What year was that?
1998.
What was the charge?
First degree rape.
First degree rape?
Yes.
And that was in Alabama?
Yes.
She was 17, you said?
Yes.
Was there another charge that you had in your history?
Yeah, it was, say the same thing. It was just another girl put in. But it was like, basically, like, I did this same thing to this other girl.
You got her pregnant, or you just...
No, I didn't get her pregnant. It was just we was messing around, and she said I made her. And it's the same time that this other girl said the same thing.
And
basically, they said I did the same thing to both of them in the same night at the same time.
So you were 18. How old was this girl?
Same age.
So both 17.
Now, my paperwork, I don't know if this changed, but in my paperwork, they had like two different ages. Then it said it was a white female. It's not a white female. It's two black females, and they were the same age. I don't know if they ever changed it because they got my tattoos and everything.
Because I thought
else.
One of them was a younger female.
Yeah, they got a lot of my stuff messed up. They got the tattoos and everything messed up. So I don't know if they changed it or fixed it, but... Mm-hmm. We were all like 17, 18 years old, and it was two black females.
The missing girl, have you ever seen her around the complex? Or
see her all the time when we were in and out. I said, when we would come in, they would be either playing between the complexes or on her mom's back balcony, because going up the steps, you can see their balcony, or their back porch, rather, from the balcony. They would always speak whenever we would come in and out. And other than that, that was about it.
She dances a lot back there, doesn't she?
I guess. On the balcony.
Well, they be back there playing most of the time. Mm-hmm. When I see them, as far as dancing, I don't know.
Yeah. I heard she does a lot of dancing. Mom says she dances on the back porch a lot.
That's where we see them back there.
Was she friendly? I mean
she always spoke. I mean, I said, other than that, that's pretty much all I know about her. I said she would always speak. If she seen us, she would speak. Regardless if we seen her or not, she would let us know that she was there. She would speak.
I gotcha. Did she ever come over to y'all's apartment or anything?
She's never been to our apartment.
So
we've never been to Lauren's. If she has, she's been there when I wasn't there. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Lauren told me one day that they missed the bus and they came and used her phone to call their mom and let her know they missed the bus. Other than that, that's all I know about them being there.
Okay.
So she's never been in Lauren's apartment other than just at the door?
Not when I was there.
Okay. What about, have they ever been in your cars?
No.
Either one of your cars?
No.
Robert chose his words very carefully, stating that Naomi was never in his girlfriend's apartment while he was around. By framing it this way, it leaves the possibility that she might have been in the apartment when he wasn't there. So, if any evidence was ever found in that apartment, Robert could state that he was not lying.
What time did you say you left the apartment that day? To go up to Bruton?
Which time? I went twice.
It had been earlier in the day.
I went to see a friend. I left around like close to about 12:15, 12:30.
Okay.
Went to see what friend?
Yolandra Mitchell.
When did you do that?
That Wednesday.
Okay. I didn't have that in the list of stuff we went through. Where was it before you dropped Lauren off or after you
dropped? It was after I dropped Lauren off. When I dropped Lauren off, that's where.
That's where you went before
Bruton? Yeah, I was going to see her.
Okay.
Now, she lives in Bruton. That's why I was going to Bruton to see.
Okay. So you got into Bruton. I have down 1:30 to 1:40. Mm-hmm. And then you went to?
I was going to see her, but when.
What's her name again?
Yolandra Mitchell. Yolandra Mitchell. Mitchell.
Okay. And you were going to go to her house?
Yes.
Where she live?
I cannot remember the street name, but it's at 112. Her phone number is 2517.
Okay.
And you gave me her phone number so I could just check to see that you called her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You went to her house on your lunch break?
Yes, that evening, yes.
Okay. How long were you there?
About 30 minutes, maybe. It was just like a lunch break. And she lived like right around the corner. Well, yeah, basically right around the corner from Fred, the neighborhood over across from it.
What kind of girls are you into? I mean, what do you like?
I like grown women. I mean, women that's my age. I mean, I really have no preference of what size or, you know, how fat or how skinny, how tall or thin, but they're going to be legal. You know, I don't fool with no kids. I don't mess with no teenagers, anything like that.
What we just saw was Robert giving a completely unprompted explanation to his disinterest in minors. From this point on, you will see the investigators switch gears and increase their pressure on Robert, asking bolder questions after recognizing that he is cracking under the pressure.
I mean, you like younger girls? Like,
I mean, I haven't been with anyone younger than Lauren.
What's the youngest girl you've been with?
Lauren is the youngest girl I've been with.
And she's 30?
30, yes.
I gotcha. Is there any reason, like, your DNA would be on Naomi's body or anything like that?
I don't see why it would be. We've never been in spit distance of each other. So, there's no reason it would be.
Okay. So you've never had any physical contact with her?
None whatsoever.
Okay. What if I were to tell you that your car was in the area where her body was found that night?
No, that's impossible.
Why?
Because it could have been.
Why? Tell me why.
Because when I have my car, it's either at work. When I leave work, it comes straight back to Johnson Avenue, Lauren's apartment.
Did anybody else have your car that night?
No one ever has my car.
So you don't know, does Lauren ever drive your car?
She has
A few times, but it's been on, a little while since she drove my car.
Okay. I'm just going to be honest with you. What time did you pick Naomi up?
I never picked Naomi up. Just being honest with you.
You sure about that?
I'm positive.
Well, about the time you leave your apartment is the time she goes missing.
But the thing about that is, when I drop Lauren off, I go straight to Bruton. So how is it that I can pick her up?
The thing about that is that we already have your phone records.
Okay.
And you were at the apartments at 1:30.
I was gone at 1:30.
Phone records show no, you were there at 1:30. That phone number that you gave me is the phone number we subpoenaed for the records. You were at the apartments at 1:30. You were not in Bruton.
I was on my way to Bruton.
You were. I'm not going to argue with you.
I mean, you don't have to argue, but okay, just okay. If you say I was at the apartment, just please search my last. Nothing has been changed in my car since the day that the first officer flipped through it and looked through it. Everything is in there. If you find anything in that car, it's going to be from Yolanda Mitchell.
Despite Robert being caught in a string of lies, he continues denying his involvement in Naomi's disappearance. He clings on to the fact that he hadn't cleaned his car, and investigators still found no evidence of Naomi being in it. He then uses this to paint himself as a victim in the situation.
I never got her to get in my car. She's never been in my car. That's why I've never cleaned my house. I've never cleaned my car. Because of that. So I feel like if I clean that car, and y'all find it clean, oh, well, he cleaned it before we can get to it. That's why I didn't do that. Because I feel like, you know, it's eventually going to come. So. I'm already, you know, have a status of sex offender. So whatever I have is going to be searched. I feel like that anyway.
Right.
Because I'm already a potential suspect, I guess. Let me say that.
What made you feel that way?
Like I just told you. I feel like, you know, when you look through it, I'm right there at the complex where this child's missing. I'm right there. I'm already, like I said, sex offender status is over my head already. So I'm right there. So it's, you know, he's right here. So why not just check him out?
Right.
That's why. To get myself in the clear, I said I wasn't cleaning the car, and I wasn't cleaning my house. That way, if you need to search it, go through it, however, do that.
I got you.
Robert continued to deny any involvement in the disappearance of Naomi, despite plenty of evidence incriminating him. The total runtime of this interrogation alone is over 4 hours, and it wasn't until the two-hour mark that Robert finally said something he instantly regretted.
Let me help you.
Tell me how.
Let's talk about it. I already Let's told you what I... It, listen to me, Robert.
I understand you tell him that, but I still feel like I'm never going to see the light of day. I mean, like I said, it's nobody's fault with my own, but I mean, I am sorry for what happened to his child. But at the same time...
I can't wrap my f***ing head around it. What could have gone so bad for you to do this to this girl?
Did they find the candy in her mouth?
Yes.
They found the candy in her mouth?
Yes. Okay. What was it?
It was candy.
What kind of candy?
I have no idea. I just know she was eating candy.
Okay.
You know.
Similar to the statement that Robert made earlier regarding his attraction to minors, this statement was completely unprompted. Nobody but the investigators knew about the candy that was found in Naomi's mouth. While it's clear that the pressure is weighing heavily on Robert at this point, this footage makes it seem as if Robert couldn't help but ask this question for some sort of twisted gratification. Now that Robert has made it clear that he's responsible for this heinous crime, the gears of this conversation switch as he desperately tries to find a way to justify what he did, likely fabricating details every step along the way.
Ma'am.
Listen to me, Robert. I'm not here to pass judgment on you, to belittle you, talk down to you, anything like that. You're a grown man. Okay. I don't know what happened. I wasn't there. But what I would like to do is have some answers. What happened when she came out of the house? Were you outside when they were walking the dog? No. You just happened to see her coming back outside?
I'm already outside.
You were? Where were you at?
I just came down the steps.
Okay. Did she come out the door?
She had came out, she spoke. Yeah, spoke back. Said she didn't like my shoes.
She liked your shoes?
Oh, thank you. And she said something that I didn't understand. So I said, what did she say? She was like, nothing. Went on to my car. Got 2 Powerades out of my trunk. She went to the hospital and went for her. And I came back out. Told me my charger. Went to the car. And she said, yeah. And I asked her what she said. She told me you heard. I said, no, I didn't. What did you say? And she was like, well, where's Lauren? I said, Lauren's at work. She said, can I come in with you? And I told her no, because she couldn't come in. She just kept on, and I let her come over, I kept telling her no. She walked over to the steps. I was going up the steps. And she said, I'm coming here. And I said, I know. The further I went up, the further she came up. When I make it to the door, she's at the top of the steps. And I tell her to go back home. Go home. Go home. She stands there and she's like, why can't I come in? Why can't I come? I said, because you can. You don't need to be over here. Leave. She starts back down the step, closed the door. I locked the door. She knocks on the door. I answer the door and ask her to leave again. As I walk back out on the balcony, because I didn't want no one to get to the session that I was trying to lure her in or drawing her in. I walk back out on the balcony. There's not no one in sight, no one. And I was like, you know, man, on any particular day, there'd be 100 people around here. But in this instance, there's no one here. So, walk back to the end of the balcony, and I tell her just to go home. Again, go home. So she starts down the steps like she's gonna leave. So when I turn around, she comes back again. She comes back again this time. She walks all the way up on me like she's trying to brush up against me, telling me I'm scared of her. I'm like, I'm not scared of you, I just need you to leave. If something happened and somebody say something, then you got a problem. There ain't gonna be no problem. There ain't gonna be no problem. So I don't go back to the house. I don't even go back in the apartment. I go some of the steps. And I'm trying to wait on her just to leave because I don't want no problems about her being around the door.
Right.
So when I go get up and throw some of the garbage, she comes right over to the garbage can where I am. Walk back up the steps. Walk back in the house. She's coming back up the steps. She comes to the door. So when she gets to the door, I stand at the door and talk to her.
She stands there and she's making gestures to my, can she come in? Can she come in with me? I said, no, you can't come in. So she's still standing there. So right when I close the door, she grabs a knob, tries to open it. I said, get away from the door. Just let you get away from the door. And she leaves. I turn around and close the door again. She knocks again. She knocks and finally I open it. She comes in. She never leaves, never goes no further than the front door. And she's making gestures, sexual gestures.
Like what?
Can she see the she can handle the she got a boyfriend that's 15 and this, that, and other. I'm like, well, I ain't got nothing to do with that. No, I really don't. And at this time is when she didn't grab my dick, but she grabbed it like my shirt, the bottom of my shirt, like she was trying to. And so when I grabbed the wrist, told her to stop, and she's keeping on. And I really didn't mean for things to go where they did. I didn't try to hurt the child, but before I realized I had choked her out.
How, just around the neck?
Around the neck. I choked her out around the neck. And I said, I didn't really mean for it to happen. I didn't mean to do it. You know, I heard when she was found. That's why I said, I would really like for them to take a DNA test, because they said when she was found, she didn't have on no bottom. She was fully dressed. I never took any of her clothes off. I never took anything anywhere. She was fully dressed.
Soon after this interrogation, Robert Howard was charged with first-degree murder. What followed was a 2.5-year struggle to take this case to trial. It was originally set to go to trial in March of 2020, but due to the pandemic, it was continually delayed. Finally, in August of 2021, prosecutors took Robert to trial. Their plan was to focus on two main things. First, they wanted to explain to the jury what kind of person Naomi Jones was. Naomi was a fun, loving, and charismatic young girl who wanted nothing but to uplift the people around her, and it was important to the prosecution and Naomi's mother that the jury knew that. The second focus was the duct tape found in Naomi's hair. While searching Robert's home, 5 pieces of duct tape were found that matched the class characteristics of the duct tape found in Naomi's hair. This led to another question. If Naomi was deceased, why would the perpetrator use duct tape at all? This led investigators to believe that Robert hadn't killed Naomi right away, and therefore used duct tape for either detaining or quieting Naomi. This deduction went hand in hand with the forensic evidence, suggesting that Naomi died 24 to 36 hours after her kidnapping. This directly challenges the defense's claim that Robert didn't intentionally kill Naomi. In other words, the prosecution wanted to ask the question, what exactly did Robert do to Naomi, and does it match what he said had happened? The third focus for the prosecution was a big piece of evidence given by Robert himself.
Did they find the candy in her mouth?
Yes.
They found the candy in her mouth?
Yes.
As mentioned before, this is a detail that only the killer would have known without being told. And despite all of this, Robert continued to plead not guilty, and the defense tried to invalidate Robert's confession by saying it was obtained unlawfully through coercion. However, this was immediately shot down, as the judge made a determination that the confession was obtained lawfully. After 3 days of testimony, the jury found Robert Howard guilty of first-degree murder. Before the final sentencing was given by the judge, Naomi's mother was given the chance to speak to the court directly. Shantara had this to say. What I lost is indescribable. I lost a daughter, a sister, a granddaughter, and a great-granddaughter. I am thankful for justice being served on my daughter's behalf today, and I will never forgive him for what he did to my child, and I hope he lives with it every day of his life. Christmas and birthdays for the past 4 years, nothing has been the same. My family has been torn apart, and I've been trying to keep it together all of these years. The missing piece of the puzzle is gone. On August 12th, 2021, Robert Howard was given the maximum sentence, life without the possibility of parole.